In this podcast, I have the pleasure of talking with voice specialist and speech pathologist Joanne Kasdan. Her story of how she became to be an expert in her field takes in many twists and turns and is both fascinating and unexpected. Based at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Burbank, Los Angeles, Joanne is a practicing speech pathologist. She also runs her own private practice, providing voice rehabilitation and training for singers and actors. Widely published, Joanne has recently added Everyday Voice Care, the Lifestyle Guide for Singers and Talkers, which contains some really practical advice and guidance on how to take care of yourself and your voice. In this interview, she shares some tips and tricks within the book for free. So sit back, turn your smartphone to stun, and enjoy this conversation with Joanne Kasdan.
Joanna, it's lovely to speak to you. Thank you for making time with me today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to chat.
Good. Well, you made me smile when you described your career as a long and winding road. So, Joanna, please share with our listeners an overview of how you began your career and arrived at where you are today.
Well, I have to match Paul McCartney's Long and Winding Road with John Lennon's Life is What Happens When You're Busy Making Other Plans, because I am certainly not where I expected to end up. Not that this is the end, but it's been an unusual journey. I started out on the East Coast of the United States in a musical and literate family, doing lots of classical music and also being exposed to very raw folk. My dad was both a Juilliard-trained composer and an ethnomusicologist who would go into the backwoods of New York State and record fiddlers and balladeers and track down and research what they were doing. So I had the sense of music being involved in real people's lives, both in the backwoods and when my dad and uncle would play Beethoven sonatas at the house. So I was definitely steeped in music. My mother was involved in language and education studies, so it was kind of natural I would turn into a songwriter, which I did, although I was also studying theater arts along the way. And I spent the 1970s kind of driving around the United States in a VW Rabbit with a guitar and some LPs in the back, trying to be an activist singer-songwriter, which not very many women were doing. And unfortunately, the tide from the 60s activist songwriters had already turned, so I was getting responses like, oh, yeah, those topical songs, those things that used to be popular, that's what you're doing. Or I would get into trouble because the folk clubs didn't hire very many women and the feminist songwriters didn't want someone who had a yoga guru and the New Age people didn't want someone who was an angry activist. So I kind of fit in between all those genres. But I had adventures and learned a lot and was very interested in how the voice kept working. I had a degree in theater. I had all this musical background. And whenever I was in one place for any length of time, I would pick up some voice students here and there. So one thing and another brought me to Los Angeles, where I studied some more theater arts at CalArts, and that qualified me to get a really nice secretarial job here in LA while I continued to try to do some music projects. And then kind of ran into a dead end where I was typing during the day and playing music in the evening and the weekends and developed raging tendonitis in my arms a little bit before tendonitis and carpal tunnel became very well known. And everything kind of screeched to a halt. I was on disability for a year. I was depressed. I was living on the kindness of family and friends and hardly able to drive or cut up vegetables because my arms hurt so much, and had to really stop and think, okay, now what am I going to do when I grow up? And at that point, someone mentioned speech pathology, which I'd barely heard of. I went to browse a bookstore with career guides, and one of the pages literally fell open to the field of speech pathology, and I read the description and said, you know, I could probably do that. And went back to school one more time and became trained in medical speech therapy, which has been my main profession since then, but always doing music and vocal projects on the side. About 10 years ago, I was fortunate enough to get a position at a new cross-disciplinary voice clinic at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center here in LA, where we focus on treating performing artists with voice problems. Certainly, we see lots of other folks, school teachers and attorneys and parents and other people who run into voice problems, but our focus is on the working performer, the folks who sing in their church choir and can't do it anymore because of some medical issue, or the actor who just got off the road and is in some vocal fatigue trouble. I've worked with some very famous people whom I can't talk about, and I've also worked with some people really struggling to get by. But in all cases, I'm able to offer them my musical knowledge. There's a keyboard in every rehab treatment room, along with medical knowledge. I do video stroboscopies. I look at people's vocal cords. I talk about them with doctors. But I can also talk about what it's like to be a performing artist because I was one and still occasionally am one. So that's the winding road with a few bumps that took me to where I am now.
How fascinating. What was the inspiration then for writing Everyday Voice Care, The Lifestyle Guide for Singers and Talkers?
It actually is the third version of something. It started as a sort of 12-page stapled together little summary of things that I made so that I could give students something handy and didn't have to repeat myself too often about why they needed to be careful about what they ate and what they drank and what they breathed and how they exercised. 4 years ago, I turned it into a more extensive book, which was called How to Take Care of Your Voice, The Lifestyle Guide. And that got a very nice reaction, but gradually I realized it was not only in need of an update, but that there was more information to add, and I kind of wanted to reformat it, make it a little bit easier for people to find summaries and browse through, and republished it this past year as Everyday Voice Care. So that's that story. It's designed ultimately for voice teachers so that they can give their students something that's really fast, and that the teachers don't have to spend a lot of time explaining the basics. Obviously, any vocalist is, you know, invited to buy one, but in a way my target was to make the teaching and learning process simpler for everybody.
Well, I think it's a book for everyone, having read it cover to cover. I think there are many, many things, and whatever stage people are at, then it's certainly worth a read. Your work is interesting, and indeed, I'd argue, groundbreaking, because you successfully bridge the cultural divide between what people would see as traditional Western medicine and a more natural and holistic approach to vocal health. How do you go about doing this?
It has sort of come naturally in that I have needed both types of medical care in my own life. There were times when I was certainly living in a counterculture without a lot of money, and if I could browse in a health food store and educate myself about holistic care, that seemed more accessible than the more mainstream medical services that were somewhat scary and off-putting and expensive. However, I now work in such a mainstream setting, and I understand and appreciate the precision and the dedication and the strengths of that system as well. One of the experts in our medical voice field, a researcher named Nelson Roy, who works at the University of Utah, has said that voice actually occurs and voice disorders occur at the intersection of the mind and body, which is a place that Western medicine is still not very skilled. And in a way, I think that working in the field of voice requires us to be open-minded and holistic and cross-disciplinary. The throat is an interdisciplinary place. You know, all the medical systems come together there, from respiration to digestion to neurology. The brain is right nearby. The spine is right nearby. And people's personalities are also wrapped up in it. And so people need to be able to access very specific diagnostic things that are state-of-the-art when necessary, but we also need to be using things that are personally comfortable and that feel authentic to us. So my own path and experiences in healthcare, and also what I understand from other performers, really, really requires me, I think, to live in both of those worlds and try to explain them to each other.
So what are some of the common problems you come into contact with that people have with the singing voice, or even the speaking voice for that matter?
Certainly there are overuse problems. People that are cheerleaders or sports enthusiasts and then want to be singers may have some history of just what we call wear and tear damage on the vocal cords. That's probably the most common single thing. The speaking voice, often people are kind of talking in a low tone without a lot of breath support because that sounds cool and unassuming, and it's kind of a dialect now, but it does become fatiguing to the voice, or it is used to cover up the fact that there are some other weaknesses in their voice. And once we take a look with the stroboscopy, it turns out that the vocal cords don't meet really well unless they're squeezed low and in that style. Most of the people that I work with, I would say, have a combination of factors that have hit their voice all at once. It may not be any one thing, but they had the flu right before they had a bunch of performances, and then they moved, and then they broke up with someone, or they had some other family crisis, and it all kind of snowballs, and then their voice really gets their attention because it's not working, but their whole life kind of needs to stop and reboot and refresh and heal. So that's when I really go into a very interesting diagnostic mode of, well, let's see what happened when, and then that happened, and then that hit, and then the person sort of understands, oh, everything in my life affects my voice. And when there are enough things that reach threshold, then it not only sounds bad, but feels bad, hurts, can't reach their notes, and so on.
Let's talk about self-taught singers, because mm-hmm. They're an interesting group. They tend to mistakenly take on ideas born out of singing mythologies, which at best can leave them not achieving what they want to, and at worst hurt their voice and their vocal apparatus. What are some of the key myths that you feel need to be busted, and what are the top three things vocalists should be doing to maintain a healthy voice?
Okay, great question. I would say one of the important myths is that singing can't be taught and that singing lessons will ruin your sense of authenticity. Neither of those things are necessarily true. There are very good teachers, and there are ways to learn vocal skill that stay connected to a person's own feelings, lyrics, and stance in the world. However, many of those good teachers are not found in music schools. They are found in theater schools. And I would say that one of the really useful things that untrained singers can do is to find a class in voice for the actor. They will learn about their body and breath and connect it to words and connect it to meaning and connect it to storytelling and an audience. And they will still sound like who they are, but they'll have an easier time doing it. Another very common myth is that more breath support is always a good thing. And in this scheme, breath support usually means squeezing and pushing a lot of air out from your stomach. It's not always a good thing. Sometimes it's more than your vocal cords can handle. Sometimes it's not being managed well, and people would do better off using less air, but a better balance of the physiological force in their torso versus in their throat. Corollary to that is the myth that there is one perfect way to breathe and everybody gets it but me, which I think, Paul, you've probably come across in your coaching. There's not one perfect way to breathe. There are some basic principles, but everybody is a little bit different, and what works for one person may not work for another. So again, it's not necessarily a bad thing to look for a teacher who can help find out what works for that individual. Probably the other really big myth that is still out there, a little bit more in the classical academic world than the self-taught pop rock world, but still very pervasive, is that getting vocal nodules is the end of the world, or the proof that you have no talent, or a dire diagnosis that means you need surgery. None of those things are true. Vocal nodules are calluses. They're the body's way of saying your vocal cords are working a little too hard. Get some more training, back off the intensity, and if you go through the right, if they're caught early enough and you go through a really good retraining or rehab process, you'll never get them again. And if you do get them again, then they're another signal that you need to back off and rebalance your life. But nodules are not by any means the end of the world. In terms of top recommendations, other than don't smoke, which I'm not going to count as one of my three, because I hope that it's obvious to singers. The first one is to save up a little stash of money before you need it and do a little research to find out who the best voice doctor in your area is, so that when you get into trouble, you've already got a little savings account to pay for a really, really good diagnostic exam. There's no substitute for a diagnostic exam with a doctor who has video strobe equipment and has worked with lots of other singers and really knows what they're looking at. It's not cheap necessarily, depending on what healthcare system you live under, but it is important. So if you can stash a few dollars a week when your voice is healthy, then by the time you get that combination of a bad cold and a heavy gig schedule and some other life stress, you know, you might have a few $100 that you can take to the doctor you've already found. If you can, get a checkup when you're healthy so that you get to meet the doctor and get a relationship. And then again, when you're in trouble, you've got somewhere to go. But don't just try to use all the holistic things for too long. Get to a doctor pretty quick. I've already mentioned taking classes in theater voice, but I would say that's another really strong recommendation for singers in all styles. Again, the theater training teaches how the breath, body, throat, and mouth work all together in an integrated way that stays connected to your lyrics and your audience. And whether people are singing in a classical, relatively formal style, or a self-taught alternative rock, pop, screamer, whatever style, that theater background, I think, is really a missing piece for a lot of people's technique. And I can't really recommend it too highly. The third general recommendation is to take care of every part of your health, because, again, your voice is influenced by everything. Every system of your body, every meridian, every part of your mind and emotions and spirit, and your stance in the world, your political voice, all of those things are connected into your throat. And so anything that you're taking care of is important. If you've got a sprained ankle, treat it well, because it could affect your posture and that could throw your breathing off when you're on stage. If you're having digestive problems, take care of them. Figure out what's healthy for you. That will help your voice. So the good news is that any kind of wellness practice is going to help your voice. By the same token, anything that you're neglecting in your life, physically as well as mentally and spiritually, anything that you're neglecting could turn into a problem for your voice, because the voice covers all of it. It's influenced by all of it. It expresses all of it to the world. So you have to kind of be really, really mindful about self-care in every area. And when those things are working, the voice really blossoms and communicates a lot of important things to the people that are listening to you. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. It does make tremendous sense. So what are some of the most important preventative measures, in your view, that singers could and should take to keep their voices healthy?
Preventative measures, as I was saying, be mindful and careful, but not fanatical, about general wellness and healthcare and keeping your life in balance. More specific things, humidity is a big deal. At least out here in Southern California, where we kind of live in a desert and have lots and lots of people who want to be professional voice users. The voice really likes a humid environment. Over there in Britain, you're, I think, kind of set.
It's just wet over here.
Yes, yes. It's certainly wet and misty. And, you know, if the green plants are happy, probably the voice is happy.
Indeed.
Eating small meals rather than big ones, especially before a show, is an all-purpose useful recommendation. Warming up your body and warming up your mind before you warm up your voice. So get physical, do some stretching, do some breathing, get an intention of what it is you're practicing and warming up for before you start to vocalize can make a huge difference. And warm up and practice with clear goals. Don't just use up your voice on some scales that somebody else told you would be good for you, but you're not sure what you're supposed to be paying attention to. That really wastes your vocal capital and is not a very good use of warm-up time. I'm a big fan of warming up using a straw, and it's a little bit hard to describe in an interview like this, but if you go to YouTube and look for a gentleman named Ingo, I-N-G-O, T-I-T-Z-E, that's Ingo, I-N-G-O, Tietze, T-I-T-Z-E. Look for his name and the word straw, and you will get a couple of nice little videos of one of the best voice scientists in the world warming up his voice using a straw. You use it kind of like a kazoo, and you go, ooh, and sing through it, and it does really lovely things to the aerodynamics and the way the sound waves bounce around, and it's just kind of an all-purpose warm-up and reboot. Take rest breaks. If you've been using your voice a lot, even 5 minutes off can make a big difference. If you're in the middle of a rehearsal, don't go take your break and chat with everybody in the control room. Actually take some silence. The vocal cords have little cells that will be very happy to get a little break. And finally, I would say don't use your phone in the car. Don't talk on a phone over that amount of road noise unless it's a real, real big emergency. But people who have jobs or performances where they're using their voice a lot and then they're on their commute in a subway or a bus or a car, and then that's when they're catching up with their friends and family over that background noise. Big mistake. Big mistake. Text, email, save the phone calls if you must until you get home. I think that's the quick list. All the rest is in the book.
That's a great list. What do you feel are two or three of the most significant breakthroughs in regards to vocal health science and or research that have been developed in the last 10 years, particularly as it relates to singing?
I would say that the biggest breakthroughs have really come from two directions. One is technology, certainly. The Internet has made so much information available to people. People are teaching on Skype, which means they can choose any teacher in the world. Obviously, pitch correction software has helped the careers of lots of people. There is software that helps people understand the acoustic components of their voice, what's called the resonance spectrum. You can watch your voice in real time on systems like Voce Vista, some of the work done by Joe Estel, and others where you can learn how to modulate resonance and tone quality by actually seeing a visual display of your sound waves. That's been a huge breakthrough. Obviously, video stroboscopy as a diagnostic tool has been around for 20 or 25 years in relatively wide usage, but more and more doctors have it, and more people are getting trained in how to interpret it, which is just as important as investing in the gear. So that's the technology side, and there's much, much more to come. It's still a field that's growing very, very rapidly in terms of research and the new things coming out. But I think the other big breakthrough is the interest and the recognition of interdisciplinary work. And doctors who are young, who listen to rock music or who are interested in yoga, who are interested in the same mind-body alternative flexible way of thinking that young singers are, but are still doing the medical research and being diligent with their craft of medicine. There are also young teachers who are getting away from the old divide of either you're a classical singer or you're a pop singer. There are more and more teachers who can do both. And I think the open-minded character of the internet generation is changing how people think about voice and helping more people understand that this cross-disciplinary frame of reference is exactly what the voice needs and benefits from.
So if you were to sort of sum it all up, Janet, what would you say success means to you, and how do you know you've achieved it?
Success for me increasingly means living in the moment, letting the moment teach me. As my own voice teacher, Catherine Fitzmaurice, says, teach the body that's in front of you, not the technique that you read in a book. Everything that I do teaches me and prepares me for what's coming next. And I can't really conceive of success any other way than that spiritual way. Certainly, I'm happy that I've got a comfortable life at the moment, more than when I was on disability or living on the road on a shoestring. But the bigger success is feeling that I have a little niche that suits me. I do work that fits the way my brain works, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to help other people doing what I do.
So, Joanna, do you have any passing thoughts about the modern vocalist that you might want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think the Modern Vocalist is a fabulous organization and site and concept. It's dynamic, certainly is a more developed platform than I can fully use, but there are lots and lots of ways for people to use it, and that's part of its strength and, again, part of the whole internet concept. The Modern Vocalist has helped me communicate with harder singing, rocking crowd than I would probably meet in my everyday circles, and that's taught me a lot. I think Robert Lunte is really a pioneer and a hardworking dude. I want to personally thank him and cheer on all of the pioneers and volunteers like yourself who contribute to the Modern Vocalist and keep it running. I'm usually hanging out in the Vocal Health Forum on the Modern Vocalist, so members and other browsers can find me there. I just think it's a very nicely run, very dynamic, forward-thinking website and organization. Really pleased to be part of it.
Joanna Kasdan, thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, wasn't Joanne just great? I hope you found some really useful bits and pieces within that to help you with your own vocal work. To find out more, simply mouse on over to www.voiceofyourlife.com, where there's more information about the contents of the book and Joanne's work. That's all we have time for this time around, so stay tuned to themodernvocalist.com to find out who's our next influential leader of voice. Until then, take care. Bye for now.